Simply Authentic is the podcast where realtors and referral partners get the conversations they actually want to hear. I'm Crystal Forbes with Great American Title, a family-owned and operated title company with over 30 years serving the real estate community. We provide title and escrow services for both Missouri and Kansas with locations throughout Southwest Missouri. We focus on providing exceptional customer service and trustworthy, reliable title insurance coverage. Our relationships with other industry professionals are why we are able to make dreams come true one closing at a time. Great American Title is proud to sponsor the Simply Authentic podcast, bringing the most relevant, real, and sometimes challenging conversations that help all of us get better. Tune in, subscribe, and let's keep this industry moving forward together. Simply Authentic, recorded at the Gershman Mortgage Studios, available wherever you get your podcast.
Welcome to the Simply Authentic podcast with Angie and Tanya. We are real estate pros, entrepreneurs, leadership gurus, and community enthusiasts. Our passion is sharing our experiences to enrich the lives of others. We hope to inspire you to live authentically. Welcome back to the Simply Authentic podcast. I'm Tanya Murfin.
And I'm Angie Mullings. And today we have a guest in studio. We're very excited to have Maria Galgano with us. She is a fellow realtor that we actually have got to know at the board, through leadership at the board. So, and Maria's got a really interesting story. It's very timely in terms of what's going on with immigration, that kind of thing. So we wanted to have her on and talk about becoming a U.S. citizen and, and all those great things. So welcome, Maria.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah. We're glad you're here.
Yeah.
So you're from Honduras.
Yes.
Originally born there.
And born and raised.
Yeah. You have a story to tell us about immigrating to the United States and becoming a U.S. citizen. So we're going to dive into all of that. So start with being born in Honduras and tell us a little bit about your country and what led up to you leaving, and we'll just kind of go from there.
Yeah. So I was born and raised in Honduras. I'm originally from the coast area, La Ceiba. We call it the bride of Honduras because you have beach, mountains, you get access to anything that you like to do. And I moved to the capital of Honduras when I was going into fifth grade. So I went back and forth during summer vacations to my hometown to visit family and friends. And my parents always said that I had this desire since I was a little kid to leave the country. Like, my mom used to tell me, like, you would always say that you wanted to live somewhere abroad from a very young age. And the older that I got and the more that she saw that I was still serious about that, she's like, oh, she's definitely gonna try to leave at one point. I deeply love traveling and just exploring new places and meeting new people. And when I was a freshman in high school, that's kind of when our school started prepping us for college applications and everything. Sure. I was blessed to go to a private school in Honduras. I was a scholarship kid. So I went to a very nice school that was accredited for the U.S. if you wanted to apply for universities here. So freshman year, universities started coming. We had a counselor that would help us kind of prepare, see what our grades were. And we didn't know how we were going to do it because I don't come from a family that has a lot of money. My mom was a single mom and she worked really hard. And anything that I had was because it took a village. Like, it wasn't, nothing was like handed to us. And it was a lot of hard work and just support. It does take a village. So my freshman year, everyone kind of knew what they wanted to study. I did not. I just knew that I wanted to leave the country and study somewhere abroad. And then there were three places that I was exploring, applying for college. And it was one in Costa Rica, one in Europe, and then in the U.S. And I graduated 2015, and I was dead set on moving right after graduation. I was like, I don't want to take a leap year. I just want to get to it and go. Yeah. So I started the application process. My mom gave me free rein on that. So I just kind of looked at the process and talked to the counselor and kind of asked what that looked like. And I would tell my mom, like, hey, this is where I need to go. And she would, like, take me and mm-hmm. take me to all my appointments and everything. And because we didn't have a lot of money, one of the things that I did was that I would sell brownies at my school. So I would bake them, like, the night before. It was, like, candy contraband in school because they didn't sell any like sweets like that.
Sure.
And they were good. So so I would bake them and package them in like pretty little like singular individual containers and everything, bags and everything. And then I'd bring them in like a Tupperware and I would sell them for not very much, but it was sure. enough that I was selling a bunch of them.
Yeah, sure.
And then we lived in this apartment complex, and my mom and I would cook some traditional foods that are really easy to like sell. Mm-hmm. So I would door knock our neighborhood and let them know like, hey, on this day we're going to be selling like empanadas or pupusas. And I would take their order and see how many wanted to order. And then we would make it at home, and we saved that money to be able to pay for the process of my visa application, because you have to apply for the visa and they require like tests and for your English and vaccination. So there's a whole process mm-hmm. that takes a lot of money to apply for. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I was able to save up to apply for it.
Okay.
And ended up going to college in Chico, California. My aunt, my mom's youngest sister, lives about 3.5 hours away from the mm-hmm. university I was living at.
Okay.
And I wanted to be close to family, but I still wanted that experience of I'm here alone and I'm figuring it out. But mm-hmm. if I have an emergency, there's someone.
Sure.
Someone.
Yeah.
So 2015, my senior year, I decided to go to California, and there was a lot of trial and like being able to leave, because again, we didn't have the money. So a friend of my mom's gifted me a plane ticket to come here as my graduation present, because we were like, we don't know how you're gonna get there, but like we'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. And then they were kind enough to purchase my ticket so that I could come here. And I graduated June, and I was in California August. I was about 2 weeks late just because we weren't sure if I was going to be able to make it here.
Yeah.
But I was accepted, and it was a roller coaster of emotions, because once you go to the embassy and they can deny you. Like, there's nothing to say, they won't allow you. And one of the things that I had to experience was that I went there, and you have to show proof that you have about a year's worth of tuition in your bank account, whether it's yours or your parents. So they denied my visa because I had a sponsor, and I immediately started sobbing. I'm like, I'm not going to be able to go. Like, they denied me and like all this money. And my dad, I remember my dad was like, don't freak out. They just said, not right now. We just need to get them this document. So, like, let's figure this out.
Right.
And we'll figure out how we figure that out.
Right.
But we'll figure it out. And we did. Again, my family and people from my mom's church really pulled through and helped us figure that out. And then I went back and they gave me my visa. Mm-hmm. And then I was leaving not too soon after that.
Right.
And I came here. It was really emotional. Like, I just knew that I was leaving. I'm like, I'm packing my bags. I came with my carry-on, my backpack, a checked bag, and that was it. Like, I left everything else back home with my mom and my grandma. I'm like, you guys figure out my things, I guess.
Right.
And I lived in California up until 2018, and then I moved here. But it's been quite the journey. I was thinking back this weekend, I was like, I've been in the U.S. for 10 years now, and mm-hmm. it doesn't feel that way, but it's mm-hmm. been that long. And it's been quite the experience. It was an adjustment for the first year,
sure.
For sure. And I don't think I realized how homesick I was the first couple of years until just recently where I was like, oh, I was really having a hard time just missing home and adjusting to new cultures and, you know, new traditions and just different things.
Right.
But I've been happy, and I was blessed enough to get my citizenship in September of last year. And that was an emotional roller coaster because I just remember during the ceremony, I was in such an awe of how many people were there, but it wasn't hitting me yet that I was there to get my citizenship.
Sure.
And then I got in the car because they give you this envelope with like next steps now that you're a citizen. And it's like, you know, tell the IRS, make sure you register to vote, like go to Social Security office so that they can update your status.
Right.
And I remember I opened it and they give you like a US flag and a small Declaration of Independence. And I opened and I started sobbing and I was like, I can't believe that like this moment finally came.
Right. So go back to you, to your college years and you learning American culture, you living here. At what point did you decide, I want to stay here and become a citizen and I'm not going to go back to Honduras?
So it was my, I want to say my sophomore year of college. There's just so much opportunity here for for growth and just so many doors that you can open here. And just, I realized that if I went back home, I was not, I would be starting back from scratch, from zero. And I'm trying to find like the right words. And I'm sorry, I'm getting emotional.
That's okay.
I realized that I wanted more for my future and my kids and my family. And it was really hard because I remember the moment I was coming out of class and I remember I was like, I can't go back home. Like if I go back home, it's hard. Like it's a struggle. And it's not that it's easy here because it's been hard. It's been a struggle.
I'm certain.
But it's a different kind of struggle. It's a different kind of hard. And I don't know if for me, I was like, it's easier for me to do this hard than that one. And I'm also just, I think my personality is very much, if I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to follow through with it. And so I think for me, it was one of those things where I was like, I'm here. Like, I'm not about to, I'm not about to throw it all away, the last two, 3 years away. Just because it's getting too hard.
Right.
Like someone else. And like, to me, I was like, my family has done so much. Like my family worked so hard for me to get the best education I could so that I could have those opportunities. So I just decided, I was like, I'm going to stay here. And it was hard because you make the decision of not necessarily abandon, but you do leave behind a piece of you.
Sure.
Like, it's home.
Can only imagine.
And you don't know, like, when you'll go back.
Right.
And when you'll see your loved ones.
I want to go back to Honduras for a minute because I want to understand, first of all, you speak very good English. Are you taught that from a very early age?
So I was, like I said, I grew up going to private school and my dad spoke English. He was a foreign exchange student in Australia as well. And my family really pushed for me to learn a second language. And it is a privilege. Like, not, if you go to public school in Honduras, you're not really getting taught English at school. If you go to private school, you're being taught English. And you have Spanish too, but you're being taught to speak English fluently.
Yeah.
Okay.
And a lot of our population speaks English as well, because we're a tourist country.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I also grew up with cousins and aunts that if I said a wrong word, they would correct me and make me speak it right.
Yeah.
And I would be, you know, I could only watch TV in English, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I would listen. Like, my school was very strict on only speaking English at school. In class, like, gotcha. We could get detentions for speaking Spanish in class and around the school.
Yeah.
And most of our teachers were from the U.S. and Canada, so that makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Yes. Within our classmates, because we could only speak English, we would just practice it.
Sure.
It.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely a privilege to be able to know two languages and to be fluent in them.
Yeah.
And you said you knew from a young age that you wanted to leave the country.
Mm-hmm.
Is that sort of common in Honduras for people to strive to leave that country? Or what? Obviously, if you started that at a young age, mm-hmm. there were people around you who had left. You said your aunt, your mom's youngest sister had moved mm-hmm. to California. So, mm-hmm. Is that sort of commonplace?
I would say it's very common for people to migrate to other countries. Like, I have plenty of friends that have gone to Europe, mm-hmm. Mexico City. Like, I have friends all over, mm-hmm. Miami. Like, I know people that I grew up with that are in the U.S. now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very common because we want more mm-hmm. for our families. And like I said, like, just the room for opportunity and growth is mm-hmm. humongous. And my dad lived in Australia, mm-hmm. and my grandma has traveled a lot growing up too. So I think just being surrounded by that, like, traveling mm-hmm. is very big. My parents were divorced when I was a really young age, so I grew up traveling back and forth from city to city in Honduras mm-hmm. by myself from a very young age, obviously with attendants taking care of me, but I got used to just doing that by myself from a very young age, and I enjoyed it because it was an experience. Like, traveling in Honduras was always an experience.
Yeah.
So I think that just, you know, that seed is planted, and mm-hmm. when it's something that you the environment you surround yourself with, I think you're just kind of like, why wouldn't I do that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like your center of influence was already had that mindset.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Maria, we're going to take a short break here for a word from our sponsors. And when we come back, I would like to know, to take it from the point that you decided, I think I want to stay here, mm-hmm. and then what that process actually looks like, mm-hmm. the money it costs, mm-hmm. and et cetera. So,
yeah.
Let's pause here a moment to hear a word from our sponsors. Buying or selling a home isn't just a transaction. It's a major life moment. But without the right realtor, it can quickly become overwhelming, stressful, and full of unexpected surprises. A lack of expertise or poor communication can mean missed opportunities, lost money, and unnecessary headaches. Reach out to Tanya Murfin at Southwest Missouri Realty to start your home buying or selling journey. And we're back. So, Maria, thank you for joining us today. Maria Galgano, she's a friend of ours and a fellow realtor. And we're talking about her becoming a U.S. citizen. Mm-hmm. And she was born and raised in Honduras. So, mm-hmm. tell us, when you decided, you were a few years mm-hmm. into college mm-hmm. in California, and you were making a hard decision because mm-hmm. you knew you weren't going to be around mm-hmm. your family 24/7 any mm-hmm. longer, to become a U.S. citizen. And mm-hmm. Angie and I, being the white American bred girls that we are, probably don't know anything about what you went through.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us what it's from start to end.
Mm-hmm.
What is it like to decide to become a U.S. citizen? What are the costs involved?
Mm-hmm.
Can you go through that?
Yeah. I want to preface this by saying that my circumstances were, everyone's immigration journey is very different.
Sure.
And mm-hmm. I acknowledge that my journey in comparison to others, it was not nearly as trying as it has been for other people that I know.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. When I was in California, I met my ex-husband, and he knew that I had a student visa, but after it expired, I would have to go back home.
Right. And how long was that student visa for? Is it for 3 or 4 years? 5 years. 5 years.
Yeah,
okay.
5 years. So we had conversations about what that was, and truly, there's many routes that people can go. You can apply for asylum if you feel like your life is at risk. You can get a work visa. Like if I went from student visa to work visa, right. You need to get sponsored by a company or a entity here in the U.S., and they most of the time have to pay for the process of that. Okay. And then a lot of people get married to get their U.S. visa as well. Okay. And when my ex-husband and I were together, we just had conversations about what that looked like, but I never... I would never like telling people that I was going to become undocumented, because I didn't want it to be like, oh, this is what you're looking for as an entry into,
right.
You know.
But you were here for that reason.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah.
So then him and I started dating, and then about a year later, we got engaged, and then we got married. And I remember I was terrified. Because we went to the attorney here in town, because we moved to California after we got engaged and married.
To Missouri.
And we were debating, like, oh, should I apply here or in California? Because we were traveling back and forth and whatever. And then I ended up talking to an attorney here, and I was like, it's probably going to be easier to do it here, just because California is such a big Latino immigrant community.
Yeah.
It's so backtracked on like applications and everything.
Gotcha.
And so we met with an attorney here, and I was terrified. I remember I started crying, and I told the attorney, I was like, am I gonna get deported? Like, am I gonna be like, is this gonna be part of my punishment, is that I'm gonna have to get deported? And he explained that no, because I didn't cross the border. Like, I didn't.
Right.
I came here with a visa. Mm-hmm. I didn't actually come through the border and cross the border right. without any documents.
Right.
So that was the difference between the two, is that I did enter the country with a legal visa, mm-hmm. And because I had married an American born citizen, that punishment of deportation is removed.
Mm-hmm.
Is the way that he explained it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you enter through the border, they normally do punish you with deporting you for 6 months, 2 months, but whatever amount of time.
Got it.
So I have a family member who he came in from he was a 12-year-old, I believe, when he crossed the border with his family.
Gotcha.
And then when he was going through his process of immigration, they had to deport him as punishment for what was supposed to be 6 months turned 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and then he was able to re-enter and continue the immigration process.
Okay.
So it's different for everyone. Mm-hmm. Circumstances are different for everyone. There's no promise on timeline. Like, they can tell you, you know, it's going to take 3 years, and it takes 5, 10, mm-hmm. 15 years. So when I applied for the residency, because I had to apply for residency first, it's a very thorough process. I had to get background check. I had to get some vaccinations done. I had to get blood work done, drug testing done, fingerprinting. Like, there was a whole process that went through that. And then there was also a lot of documents that we had to submit. So bank accounts, our marriage certificate, family photos, deed of the house. Like, if we had health insurance together, if we had a will together, anything that showed that it was
right.
supporting,
legitimate. Yeah, legitimate.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And as the sponsor, or as the person applying for, because it was my ex applying for me to be able to become a resident.
Got it.
So they're looking also at this person as, are you financially able to take care of this person if they're not able to be financially independent?
Got it.
And It was a lot of just applications and a lot of personal information. You just feel like everything's, you know, exposed. Here's my entire,
right.
And not just mine, but this person's too. Yeah. I'm like, sorry. Yeah. So it was a lot of applications and everything. And then they give you your interview for your residency, which was in Kansas City. And you go into a room. They had both my ex and myself sitting down, and we were just asked a bunch of questions about our relationship, about each other. They would talk to me directly first, and then he would not be able to speak, and then vice versa. So they would ask certain questions like, you know, what's your family's relationship like? What's their birthday? What's, you know, just different things. Right. And then after that, they give you a 2-year residency card, which has, it has a probation period on it. So during that 2-year period, they again want to make sure that everything that you're doing is right and lawfully.
Sure.
So, then after that, you have to apply for another appointment so that you can go get your probation status removed. And then after you get your probation status removed, that's when you can apply for citizenship. And every time that we were filling out applications, it was about $700 per application. So any application that you fill out through the Department of Immigration Services, the USCIS, they charge you for those applications, and on top of attorney fees and whatnot. Sure. I did the 2 years and then applied for the probation removal. It was really backed up because of COVID, so they just sent me that I could apply for my citizenship. I applied for the citizenship, and then they gave you your appointment so that you can go back for another interview. And you also have to take a citizenship test. So I did the application. They removed my conditional status, and then I had to take the test. It's 100 questions. They ask you 10. You have to get 6 right. And it's basic American history. So, you know, what are the branches of the government? Who's our current president?
Gotcha.
You know, all of...
Not trying to trick you. They just want to know that you
know... Yeah, and they have a study guide. Like, if you go to USCIS, they have a study guide with all the 100 questions. And then you just have to memorize them and learn them. And then they ask you random questions. There's a verbal one, which is just you just talking. And then there's a written one, which is them just telling you a word and you having to write it down. And then once I passed my test, they send you when your ceremony is. So that's when you pledge allegiance, and the ceremony was beautiful. It was a beautiful experience. I didn't really know what to expect, just because it looks different everywhere.
Sure.
Like in California, you pass your test, and then you have your ceremony that same day.
Gotcha.
And here it was, you pass your test, and then we let you know when.
Yeah.
Because they make it it was at the Royals Stadium in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a really smooth process for me. And at the same time, during that period of going through all that, COVID happened, and... I think one of the moments where I experienced that, because I always miss home. Like, I want to, if I could go home right now, like, if it was not that far away to go on a plane and everything, I'd be home a lot.
Yeah.
Because I do love it. I do love it. I do miss it. I love my culture. I love it. And I think the first time that I felt like I experienced that frustration of I can't go home was when my dad passed away in 2020, which regardless, I couldn't have gone because travel was stopped at the time to Honduras. But it was one of those moments where I still didn't have my residency. Yeah. And all I wanted to do was hop on a plane and go home. Like I was...
Understandably.
Yeah. And so I remember just sitting with that and being like, oh my God, I can't wait till that's not... a fear that I have of if something happens back home, now I'm able to go.
Yes. And because you know you can get back in.
Because I know I can get back in. Yeah. Yeah. And even when I was a resident, like traveling with me when I was a resident was hilarious. It still is because I travel with everything. Mm-hmm. Like I would carry a folder and I would have all of my letters from USCIS, my passport, my social security, like everything in one folder because you never know what documents they're going to ask for. And I'm just like, I promise I can come in. Right. I have everything you need. Yeah. Just tell me which one you need.
Well, and that's wise. I mean, you've got to be prepared.
So it's a process and it takes, I mean, it was about, I have a spreadsheet of the cost, but it was about $7,000 to $10,000 for me to be able to finish the entire process. Yeah.
And then how long from start to finish?
So I applied for my residency January of 2019, if I remember correctly. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And you just got it last September.
Last year. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, last year in September.
So a good 5-6 years of your life.
Yeah. Yep.
And who knows how COVID affected that, right? I mean, it definitely slowed it down.
And again, I think it looks different for everyone. Like I have family that lives in California and some of them just became citizens and they've been here for longer than I have. But it's because of that, like, you don't, every circumstance is different. Every state is different with how backlogged they are with applications. And it's a very eye-opening thing to just realize it's a thorough process that goes into order for everything. Like, I got a speeding ticket when I was going through my residency, and I immediately emailed my attorney, and I was like, I got a speeding ticket. Like, is this going to be a problem? He's like, no, it's okay. Like, it's fine. You're good. Like,
but you would worry about every little misstep, right?
Because you report everything, and you don't, you know, you don't want to get in trouble. But it's a process.
So if you were going to tell our listeners anything that is maybe a misbelief about someone wanting to become a U.S. citizen, I know that, you know, this is a hot topic, and, and there are people on both sides of the fence that will argue about it incessantly, and a lot of them just don't understand. And so what would be something, some bullet points that you would say, I wish people knew? Wish people knew this.
I think there's been a lot of misinformation and a lot of fear mongering almost. And it breaks my heart. We are in a very challenging time right now in regards to this topic. I mean, it's always been a hot topic, but obviously it is right now as well. And I think it's not as black and white as people like to make it seem. And the vast majority of people that come into the U.S. actually try to do it legally. Like, they report themselves to the border. Most people show up to their immigration appointments. Like, there's this big misconception that everyone's just coming here and, like, breaking the law and... And then there's the part of, I had a roof over my head and I had food over my head, but I'm also very aware of the economy and how the economic system in Honduras looks like for people and what some people in my own country are escaping and leaving from, whether it's, you know, danger physically or truly just not having food.
Poverty.
I think if people have the privilege and the advantage to travel, I would challenge people to do so in a way that puts them out of their comfort zone. Because it's very easy to love a different country and not really see the reality of it. And not really expose yourself to mm-hmm. being sitting in the uncomfortable and kind of coming from a place of understanding. And even myself, like my mom and I would at least once a month make sandwiches and go to like gas stations and give them away, or go to orphanages and give toys away, mm-hmm. Just because it was so important. It was really taught to me from a young age that I was so lucky mm-hmm. to live the life that I lived in Honduras, even though I wanted more.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But still seeing like, hey, you have it good. Like you have a home and right. you have food on your plate. And there's other people that don't. Right. So I think that being open to conversation, there's some people that are not, and that's okay. Like I'm always open to having conversations with people, because yeah. I do feel like a lot of it comes from you've never had to experience it. You've never known someone
yeah.
truly personally on a real personal level that has gone through it. Like yeah. I have friends that have had family deported. I have friends that live in fear currently. Yeah. And it's heartbreaking. It's, you know, and for a lot of them, like I know someone that did get deported and they were like, it's okay. I wanted to come back home anyway. Mm-hmm. Like it's not, like I said, it's not as black and white as people try to make it seem. And I would challenge people to not just get their information from the news, like actually research. And like, you know, like when I was, and I don't know if it comes from like how I was raised in like going to school, like we would have to like show our resources and mm-hmm. really try to understand the history and like what that process looks like, and not just throwing blank statements out
right.
That don't really encompass what that looks like mm-hmm. and that it's not just, you know, do it this way or do it that way, because there are people that are really poor that can't even have food in their plates there, and they just want to come here and get a job doing house cleaning, you know, restaurants, like whatever, like construction workers. Yeah. It's, you're not seeing people just not wanting to work. Everyone's just wanting to work, and a lot of us are sending money back home too, just to help
sure.
our families.
Yeah.
And I just wish more people came from a place of more understanding mm-hmm. and the process is not looking mm-hmm. easy right now either. We're seeing some really scary things going on, and that's really disheartening too. You know, even naturalized citizens being threatened with our citizenship being mm-hmm. taken away.
Yeah.
And that's scary, because it's like, well, do it right. And then you do it right and you spend all this money and then they want to take it away. And it's like, okay, well, give me my money back.
Right.
Can yeah. I get a refund, please? Right.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. Yeah.
I'm glad you started talking about what it's like, what life is like in Honduras, because we, as Americans, take a lot of things for granted.
Mm-hmm.
We do not, sure, there's poverty in our country, but it's mm-hmm. not the poverty that you see in Honduras.
Mm-hmm.
And the opportunities, you did touch on that earlier, but if you had stayed in Honduras, what would have been the opportunities for your future? What mm-hmm. jobs were available? Mm-hmm. You said tourism is a hot thing in Honduras,
mm-hmm.
but I would venture to guess that mm-hmm. opportunities in terms of what you could have done
mm-hmm.
if you'd stayed there mm-hmm. were very minimal compared to what they are here.
You have to really if you're in Honduras, higher college education, mm-hmm. master's education, doctor's education is really important. That's one way in which you're going to get your foot in the door to
gotcha.
Begin with. And number two is relationships, really, and connections.
Yeah.
But the economy has been challenging, and that makes a huge difference as well. So for me, if I would have gone back, I would have finished college there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot of fighting teeth on, and a lot of people that I know, a lot of my friends work remotely for U.S. companies because mm-hmm. they pay better than they're getting paid in Honduras.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So even if you have, like, I have friends that have a good education and they can't get a job in what they want to do.
Yeah.
And it's everyone's just trying to make it. I think one of the things, there's a lot of things that I miss about home, and it's that even in spite of the struggle that sometimes people experience, there's still that sense of community mm-hmm. and relationships, and you know, we're struggling, but we're struggling together.
Sure.
Yeah. And everyone just kind of understands. Everyone just kind of gets it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's even going back home last year, because I went back home for the first time in 9 years last year in February. It was such a. I was in the clouds when I came back because I was so happy to be back home. But it was really beautiful to see. I remember going to see my family, and someone said something of like, "Oh, in the U.S., people move so much. Like they buy their houses and their other houses. They change cars all the time. Like they're changing their things all of the time." And I didn't realize that until I was home last year. And I was with my family, and most of them are all still driving the same cars that they were driving when I left 10, 15 years ago.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. They're all still living in the same houses that they've had literally my entire life.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it all looks the same.
Right.
Yeah. It all looks the same. And it's just that warmth of like, oh, like going back to my aunt's house and like my great-grandma's house and like mm-hmm. seeing that it's all still there. It was just like, oh, it's like I never left.
Right. I bet.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's other things, like there's buildings, you know, new stores and like things that come up. But I was able to drive around in my hometown like I hadn't left 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was able to see like, oh my God, that place is still there. Yeah. Awesome. I'm going to go eat.
Yeah. Right.
So yeah, it's really interesting to see how they're such a hard work ethic, and yet still going back home and seeing how people are still like, okay, community time, like let's all hang out together and do mm-hmm. things together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's an interesting,
just a different culture.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah,
yeah. So, is it true when you became a U.S. citizen, did you have to give up your Honduras citizenship?
You can have dual citizenship. I have my U.S. citizen one just because it's so much easier to travel around. Mm-hmm. I still have my Honduran passport and everything. Okay. And I keep that just because I still have family there. Mm-hmm. I had to use my Honduran passport when my dad passed away just for legal purposes and wills mm-hmm. and whatnot. But it's, yeah, you can have
yeah. both.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Gotcha. Well, let's shift to real estate for a few minutes. So we all know each other.
Yes.
Through real estate.
Yeah.
We've all served at the board together.
Yeah.
Got to know each other really there.
Mm-hmm.
What made you decide to become a realtor?
So my grandmother has always, my mom's side of the family and my dad's side of family come from very humble backgrounds. And my grandma on my mom's side, she is a retired OR nurse, and she really has been the example of building something from nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Same with my great-grandma. And I always grew up knowing that she had real estate investments, whether it was land or little plots of land or a house here, a house there. Any money that she made, she would invest it in real estate.
Gotcha.
And that's kind of what I've seen growing up. I had seen how that saved her sometimes financially from mm-hmm. not being okay and being able to survive and make it when life got challenging at times. And when COVID, after I got my residency, it became one of those things where I was like, I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't have limitations on what job I can take.
Right.
And for a while, when you're an immigrant, you can get limited on what you can do.
Gotcha.
'Cause you're like, I can only work at a restaurant, or I can only do this right now, or I can only do that. And then mm-hmm. when you don't have to worry about certain things, I remember being like, what do I want to do? do. Yeah. Like, I don't know what I want to do. And I went back and forth on a bunch of things. I was like, maybe I'll do teaching. And then I was like, maybe not. Mm-hmm. And then I had been talking about getting my license for a while. And I just, I started doing research on what that looked like. And I had just moved to Springfield. So I don't have any like immediate like family here. Mm-hmm. Or I didn't grow up here either. So I didn't really know anyone. Right. And we were all at home. Mm-hmm. So I went online and I Googled how to get licensed in the state of Missouri. And then it came like instructions on how to do it. And I researched real estate schools around the area, went to Real Estate School of the Ozarks. And I was just like, I'm just going to do it. Like, because I was debating on going back to college. Gotcha. And I was just like, you know what? Like, a real estate license is going to be way cheaper than going to college. Mm, and sure. What if I hate my degree and I don't use it? So I ended up getting my license and just decided that that's what I was gonna do. Mm-hmm. I love it. I'm really passionate about it. I think it's also because I grew up moving a lot as well and did experience some times where I would come back home and we'd be living somewhere else. The value of having somewhere that's yours and that no one can rip that from you, right. Mm-hmm. It's really beautiful to see when people can accomplish that and the amount of privilege that we have as agents to be a part of that process. Yeah. Too, because it's one of the biggest investments people will do for themselves, and I've loved it ever since. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. Angie. I'm looking at you. Okay, so we have all served at the board together. Mm-hmm. And you went through Leadership Academy.
Yes.
You've served in different capacities there and done different things. Mm-hmm. What are some of the biggest takeaways that you've had from serving in a leadership position? And with the background that you have, mm-hmm. being grateful in kind of a different way than mm-hmm. Angie and I probably mm-hmm. are, mm-hmm. for the opportunities you've been given, mm-hmm. what are some of those takeaways for you?
The people that I've met and that I've gotten the chance to speak to, including both of you, there has been... People have given the space for the conversations to happen. Mm-hmm. And as real estate agents, we do a lot more than just, you know, help people buy and sell a house. Mm-hmm. We're in the community. We want to make the community better. We want affordability. We want access. We want mm-hmm. you know, accessibility. Like, we want all of these things. And coming from a different background, I think it just opens to deeper conversations too, mm-hmm. of, hey, we're missing the mark on some aspects where there's a whole other community that also needs access and also needs, you know, someone that will look out for their best interest. Yeah. And being able to educate people on, because a lot of people that I know that have immigrated here, their biggest dream is, I want to buy a house. Like, mm-hmm. when you are living in Honduras, like, everyone's like, you need to own your house. Like, you need to own your own house. So homeownership is not like, it's something that everyone wants. Yeah. But yeah, being able to, one, be given the room and the space to have a conversations and also to bring light to different topics. And just opening people's minds to different perspective and ideas, mm-hmm. Especially because with different backgrounds and everyone's different experiences, they can bring something to light that maybe you hadn't think about, or that you hadn't discussed or that you didn't know about. And I think that the only way forward in any capacity with things is to always be open to conversations. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people can take conversation as like, you know, I'm arguing with you, and it's like, no, I want to understand your point of view. And I also want you to understand mine, right, and ask the questions. Like, I'm never going to be offended by questions. You just have to be respectful about it.
Right.
But if we're not able to hold space for new backgrounds and new visions and ideas and point of views, then we would all be the same, and we're not.
Right. Yeah. And it's a good thing.
And we're not. Goodness, we're not.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I appreciate that perspective and you saying that, because as you were talking and saying what it that it allowed you to either teach or learn different ways, I think that I experienced that with you, and of course with Angie, but I think that that is one of the best gifts of getting into leadership and just meeting other agents is that your eyes are open to a different perspective.
Yeah.
And you also learn how to give and take at the table and how to listen and hear another perspective. It doesn't mean you have to agree.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean you can't walk out and go have a drink together because you're still friends.
Yeah.
But it does open your eyes to different cultures and different points of view and so forth.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate that point of view.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's important to hear people out, and just like you said, I think it opens opportunity for so many different things, because we all have different experiences and ideas, and sometimes someone else might see things differently, and that might help our own perspective on how we see things.
Sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate you sharing
Thank
your
you
story.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I'm hopeful from what you just said that somebody listening will hear your story, share it with someone else, because they learned something that they didn't know.
Yeah.
Or something that maybe they've not researched and didn't understand fully.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. Yes, it was so fun.
It's great. Yeah. Well, we hope that you'll share this episode. Again, as Tanya said, if there's someone that you know that maybe needs a new perspective, or they are interested in becoming a U.S. citizen, maybe this will help them. So please share this episode.
Yeah, and make sure you share, like, and follow on social media. And we want to thank Gershman Mortgage, and we also want to thank Great American Title. So we will catch you guys on the next episode.
See you then.
Find today's full video by searching the Simply Authentic Podcast on YouTube. Hit subscribe, and there you will find full videos of every episode.